Good morning. Thank you very much for coming. It's nice to have a full audience. My name is Dr. Kathy Cernas, and I am an evaluator on this project, and this is my colleague, Dr. Marianne Charth, who we're going to jointly present today. I do wish to acknowledge some other individuals on this project. Dr. Rosemary Peterkin, who is the project director and the director of Best Friends, Best Men, where the young people came who participated in this project from. And also I have to give credit to Janet Summerly, who was our senior research person. The project was funded by an Adolescent Family Life Office of Adolescent Family Pregnancy Prevention Grant, and it was a project that went over a five-year period of time. And what today we'll do is be presenting on post-test 2 data. We have no disclosures to share. Okay, what I'm going to do is, with my colleague, is we're going to describe an evidence-based intervention which fosters effective parent communication and positive peer relationships to reduce risky behaviors and to promote wellness in teenagers. And we're also going to talk about some outcomes for both the boys and the girls who participated in the intervention group and those who were part of the comparison group. And right now I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Sharp, who's going to give you a little bit about the background and some literature review.
Teenagers have high rates of risky behaviors that affect their health, including drug and alcohol use, smoking, and sexual activity that contribute to sexually transmitted diseases, HIV, AIDS, and teen pregnancy. Teens are vulnerable to negative peer pressures like engaging in sex and drinking. Parental communication and positive peer pressure can reduce risky behaviors. There are high rates of risky behaviors among the newer teenagers that affect health. Some examples are drug use. These are some American surveys in 2007. 19.9 million Americans 12 and older were current users of illicit drugs. Tobacco use, an estimated 71 million Americans ages 12 and older currently are users of tobacco products. And slightly more than half, 51% of Americans aged 12 or older report being current drinkers of alcohol in a 2007 survey. The rate of current alcohol use among youth ages 12 to 17 was 15.9% in 2007. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention reported 3.2 million girls ages 14 to 19 are infected with an STD. African American girls are at highest risk. Chlamydia rates among teenage girls is up by 1.8% in 2009, and African Americans represent 48% of all cases of chlamydia and 71% of new cases of gonorrhea. In a five-year period from 98 to 2002, the incidence of HIV among teenagers dropped a little bit. The incidence of chlamydia among females 15 to 19 dropped a little bit. The incidence of gonorrhea among females 15 to 19 also dropped. However, the incidence of syphilis increased. And although there have been some declines, the rates are still higher than we would want them to be. The birth rates for teenagers, as we've seen in previous presenters, rates for teenagers in the United States are astronomically high. The United States has the highest rates of teen pregnancy and births of all developed nations. Teen birth rates per 1,000 girls ages 15 to 19 in 2006 was 41.9. And Kathy will do the theoretical framework.
So we have an intervention, and I'm going to give you a little bit of background about it, but we use Bandura's social learning theory to guide our intervention. And the intervention has seven components to it. It's a curriculum that's offered in the schools and after school, and it provides support to the young people, role models in education on delaying sex and avoiding risky behaviors. And if these are the different seven components, and I'm going to say a little bit about each thing. Sexuality discussions was a large part of it, and that was done in groups. Mentoring by senior people and teachers, role modeling, health and exercise classes, cultural events, community service, and a formal recognition ceremony. So let's go back through some of these so you have a better understanding. The Best Friends, Best Men program, the students met during the school day at least twice a month for a class period to discuss 9 major topics. So they talked about friendships, love, dating, physical fitness, the importance of nutrition, STDs prevention, AIDS prevention. And usually there was a lively, upbeat discussion, and sometimes they had a video that they looked at, and they all talked about that particular topic. And so lessons were learned that way. In the mentoring meetings, each girl or boy, by their second year in the program, so this is not an 8-week program, this is a long-term program, and most people follow through. In the second year, they identify a teacher. Males chose a boy, a male teacher, and the female students chose a female teacher. And this person was their mentor, their advisor. And they signed a contract that they would meet together for at least 45 minutes each week. And they basically had conversations which reinforced the lessons learned in the program about the importance of abstaining from premarital sex, no drugs, no alcohol, or et cetera. There were mentor guides for the mentors, so the mentors knew what they were supposed to be doing. Now, the emphasis on physical fitness was very important. There were dance and physical fitness classes for the girls that they participated in weekly. And for the guys, there were martial art classes. So there was funding involved to pay for these different types of classes for the kids. We take care of our bodies, we eat well, that's an important message. There were cultural events and community service events. Several times a year, the Best Friends, Best Men participants attended concerts and plays, and they also participated in different group discussions in the community. Some of them also volunteered. They had to choose a particular area. Some of them were senior centers they were involved in or daycare centers. Role models. There have been young, older persons who have grown up in the Newark inner city community in the same types of environments as these persons, but they made it to the top. So bottom line was, what we saw is these young people, these mentors came back and said, here's where I've been and look where I am now. So the kids had somebody to look up to. So their role models were there. We also had a recognition ceremony for the young persons who stayed in the group and finished it to the end, where there were food, festivities, t-shirts, little prizes, things of that nature. Another part of this project where the parent communication comes in is that there was a parent advisory council. And what we learned was parents didn't really know how to talk to their kids about sex, and often they weren't talking to them about sex. Research indicates that adolescents who have parents who communicate with them, they tend to feel more positive with their parents and able to talk with them about difficult situations, about sexuality, about risky behaviors, and that will often delay that kind of behavior in the young person. So we worked with teaching parents how to communicate effectively with their kids, and the Parent Advisory Council was the group who organized that. So now, in essence, the intervention reduces risky behaviors by providing supportive relationships, parent communication, positive peer pressure, counseling, sexuality information, and health lessons. Dr. Sharp will talk a little bit about the methods.
The data we are presenting here today are from our post-test 2 data, the second year of the study. The methods used for evaluation of this intervention was a pre-test, post-test design. The sample included boys and girls from 4 intervention schools and 5 comparison schools. Participants were 6th, 7th, and 8th grade students, primarily of African-American ethnicity. Intervention participants were randomly selected. The comparison participants were a convenience sample, and the schools were matched on demographic variables. Instruments used was the Adolescent Family Life Core baseline and follow-up questionnaires. These were developed by the funding grant office, the Adolescent Family Life and Office of Adolescent Pregnancy, who gave us the grant. The demographic questionnaire was added. Paper and pencil administration of the questionnaires was done by trained staff. Statistical analyses were done using Pearson Chi-square and Mann-Whitney-U statistical tests. A significance level of 0.05 level significance was used. Some of the results. Demographic characteristics. The participants were 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. Girls and boys largely of African-American ethnicity from impoverished environments. These environments were characterized by high unemployment rates, single-parent households, and oftentimes violence in the community. significantly more intervention than comparison participants reported, being able to say no to wrong activities, being able to stay away from people who would lead them into trouble, and having dating and party rules. Believing that it's important to remain abstinent until marriage and for a future spouse to remain abstinent, and also believing that abstinence prevents pregnancies, sexually transmitted diseases, and other health problems. And also believing that having friends who think no sex before marriage is important is the best policy. Significantly more intervention than comparison participants reported having sex before marriage makes it harder to have a good marriage and family life, and a belief that sex as a teen makes it harder to study. A belief that there is a problem with unmarried teens having sex even if no pregnancy results, and belief that sex is okay only if you're married.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about peer support, because some of these findings relate to that. These kids all somewhat shared similar value systems. And what we found was significantly more intervention than comparison participants reported they admired teens who were abstinent until marriage. They had friends who admired teens who remained abstinent. They had higher numbers of friends who think someone should wait until marriage before having sex. We also found that they belong to good clubs that promoted good values. So here what we see is intervention participants chose peers who participated in programs which promoted good values like the Boy Scouts, the Girl Scouts, community service types of things. So we had more, significantly more intervention than comparison participants saying, yes, I am a member of these kinds of activities. Now, significantly more intervention than comparison participants also said they felt accepted and supported by their teachers. So remember that these participants had identified a male or a female mentor, and they did go to their mentor when there were certain issues about feeling sexuality issues. A boy wants to date me, he wants to have, and they did talk to them about those things. So there was that sense of peer, with respect to not only adolescents, but a peer with the teacher that could provide the mentorship. Significantly more comparison to intervention participants, let's talk about the more comparison to intervention participants now. They had a lot of more risky behaviors. More drinking of alcohol, more using marijuana and other drugs, having friends who drink, try marijuana and other drugs, smoking cigarettes in the past month, and pressure to do things leading to trouble. So they weren't having the super positive encounters. Significantly more comparison than intervention participants also reported it was okay to date teens who were 3 or more years older or younger than them. Now, intervention versus comparison girls and boys. So let's look at some different findings here. Post-test 2 findings indicated significantly more intervention than comparison girls and boys reported parents do not ignore when they break rules. They actually, parents took action. When rules were broken, there was firm, treatment for that bad behavior. Where the comparison kids just broke rules and nobody paid any attention to them. They just continued to do what they wanted to do. There wasn't a parent there laying down strict rules. Significantly more intervention than comparison girls and boys reported parents and guardians do not sulk and pout when they break rules. They actually do something about the problem. So there was that parent who was very concerned, and that was part of the parent advisory group. They were taught, parents were taught, you need to, when you find out a problem, you don't blow it off. You need to take care about it, stand strong. Significantly more intervention and comparison boys reported that parents used physical punishment when they broke rules, and they had more rules about dating and parties, and they could say no to wrong activities, and they can stay away from people who lead to trouble. So we see the parents making a difference in the intervention group and not so much seeing it in the comparison group or the kids reporting about that. Significantly more intervention than comparison girls reported a higher number of friends who think someone should wait until marriage before having sex, only married people should have sex, and having a good marriage seems realistic. And my friends admire teens who remain abstinent. And significantly more comparison intervention girls also this is now the comparison group. They felt more pressure to do things leading to trouble, and they, once again, were involved in more risky behaviors, the drinking of alcohol, having more friends who drank, and did drugs. Significantly more comparison intervention boys reported smoking cigarettes, drinking alcohol, having more friends who drink, and marijuana. So you're seeing the same kind of behaviors, both as a group but looking at the different genders. The boys and girls in the comparison group were not doing as good with staying away from risky behaviors. So, in conclusion, what we found was intervention participants have more significant outcomes related to less risky behaviors like alcohol and drug use than the comparison participants, and girls had fewer risky behaviors than boys. Intervention participants have more significant outcomes related to positive parental communication and supportive peers than comparison participants. And findings have implications for development of interventions which prevent risky behaviors, promote wellness, foster positive peer pressure, and parental communication with teenagers. And I want to expand on this a little bit. School nurses are really key here because most schools have a school nurse, and they can actually, with other personnel in the schools, play a key role in risky behavior prevention programs, including identifying trends, reviewing curriculum needs, selecting evidence-based practice interventions to have at schools, and evaluate outcomes of the kinds of programs that build in some of these different things we were talking about today. Now, when you review the literature, efforts to promote healthy development and reduce risky behaviors have frequently targeted adolescents through these school-based community programs, but not a lot of programs work with parents. And we know that that's a key component. You have to work with parents, you have to work with peers. You have to have the young people link up with peers with good values. That's crucial. So parents play an important role in promoting healthy development and reducing risky behaviors, but they need to be educated. And they need to know it's okay to talk to their children about sex, because a lot of them don't do it. They don't know what to say. And they're more likely to talk to the girls, but not the boy children. And dad, you know, dad may not give a really strong message either. We found that intervention improves parent-teen communication about talking about and saying no to drinking, alcohol, doing drugs, and having sex before marriage. And the intervention also promotes supportive relationships among peers. So if a kid meets a boy and the boy says he wants to have sex, they'll go to their peer, and the peer will basically say, no, I mean, you know, you got to hang in there, whatever. It's not really good to do this right now. So they get that peer support plus the parent support. And that's what we're finding the kids are talking about. Risky behaviors are complex problems requiring nurses, educators, and others like school principals, guidance counselors, parents, and peers to partner and collaborate on the implementation of policies and programs to reduce risky behaviors and promote healthy teenagers. And I think we did it within time. Do we have? That's amazing, actually. for us, we're always over time. Do you have any questions? I guess we have a minute. Yes.
I've been a little bit concerned, especially the idea of nursing and that sort of thing. Is there any sort of similar research based on comprehensive sex education, or have you guys ever thought of having the two or anything like that?
Well, you know, within these schools, the students are getting. Both groups came from the North Public School System. So both groups of kids are getting something in their physical PE classes and biology classes about sex education. Okay. The kids who enrolled in this Best Friends, Best Men got this additional intervention piece. So they were all treated initially. So they are getting some other information. But the thrust here was promoting abstinence. But we know that abstinence-only programs don't totally work. You still have to do some other things. And we're going bigger. We're saying not only abstaining from sex, but we're saying abstaining from drugs and all these other terrible things, and including violence and gangs, which we didn't really measure in this study, but that's a message that's given to the kids in the schools. And research pretty much indicates a more comprehensive kind of a program. The other thing that you find is this is long term. So kids start when they're, you know, in sixth grade, and they continue in seventh grade and eighth grade. So that reinforcement is constantly there. And then once the kids graduate from this, the girls can become diamond girls. So they can actually become mentors of these kids. So they finish the program. So there's like this constant reinforcement, which seems to be essential. Yes, Dr. Schultz.
I just had a response also. The state requires the schools to give comprehensive education. This was a federally funded program during the 90s, whenever we had abstinence education. So they were getting a dual dose. They were getting a comprehensive program, and they were getting the abstinence message.
Any other questions? Or maybe you want to open it up to the... Thank you very much.